This is Audible.
Audible Studios presents Doomed Infinity Marine. Written by J.A. Cipriano and Connor Cressley. Performed by Neil Heligers.
1. Even after all these years, my band going off still scared the hell out of me. I wasn't sure why they called them bands since they were stitched into your damn skin. I could easier pluck the eyes out of my head than rip the band from its place along my wrist. At least my eyes wouldn't have a detonation mechanism that would render me a spider of meat and bones all over this floor if I removed them. That was the way the New World Alliance liked it, though. Once you were in for life. Sure, you could leave if you didn't mind constant ridicule, scorning from your peers, and a life of being politely rejected for service at any reputable Earth establishment. How could they tell you used to be infantry, you ask? Well, that part was easy. The band stayed on. It sat there forever. A metal cuff on your hand telling all the world how cowardly you are, how you backed out on your promises. I had heard tales that century-old corpses had been found with the band still looking as pristine as the day they'd been made. It made sense. The damn things were made out of Alibrium, the strongest stuff in the universe and the reason for this godforsaken war with the bugs in the first place. I looked down at my band, a ring of silver with a screen at the top, setting my mop against the wall and sighing. Since it was still on and I wasn't a pile of meat and bones marking up the floor I'd just spent the better half of an hour cleaning, I could read what the glowing letters said as they ran across it. Like the blinking signs on Times Square Station. I didn't need to read them, though. I wasn't some grass-fed. I had been with the NWA for nearly 10 years now. Double the amount of time my father had served before he was killed by the bugs. And 2 years longer than my brother, who had lost the lower half of his body in a raid gone wrong. He still had his band on, of course. But it was tinted purple now. A sign of his sacrifice and duty. You know, in case the complete lack of a lower body wasn't enough of a clue. Let's just say he didn't get refused for service anywhere. I took a deep breath and looked at my band once more. No, there was only one reason they'd call me. If my band was buzzing, it was because they needed me for a mission. You might be asking why a soldier like myself would be mopping floors. Or why he would need to be called out for a mission as opposed to already being on one. The truth was, missions were strategic things. Chess moves at this point. A guy like me, even if I was a lowly janitor in addition to a living legend, didn't get called for just any old thing. I was important, more or less. And if they were calling me, it meant this was important too. Looking down, I saw the confirmation scroll across my band, disappearing as it circled out of sight. Mark Ryder. Report to the deployment depot for briefing and mission assessment. You are required to stop what you're doing immediately and comply with these orders. New World Alliance. Immediately my ass, I muttered, picking my mop up to finish off the floor. If this entire place wasn't clean enough to lick by the time the inspectors came to check on it, I wouldn't get paid for this hour's work. Hell, if they were feeling frisky, I might not get paid for the entire day. And I needed that money to survive. I might have been one of the longest-serving infantrymen in NWA history, but I was also as poor as a man who valued his life over the salary the Alliance paid you for your missions. It was why, instead of stockpiling as much money as possible to buy myself out of my contract, a common mistake I'd seen too many grass feds make over the years. I did the smart thing, and blew every diamond dollar I had on suit and weapon upgrades. There was an entire sect of people, protesters who argued that the Alliance should provide weapons and upgrades to all their soldiers, regardless of their earnings. They might have had a point, but having a point without having the power to back it up never got anything done. So while I might have believed the protesters when they spoke about how every person willing to risk their life for their home planet should be given all they needed to do that job free of charge, I also knew that was probably never going to happen. I needed those weapons. I needed those upgrades. They helped me in battle, helped me survive. Besides, you couldn't buy your way out of your contract if the bugs ripped out your spinal cord. At least that was the way I saw it. It was why I was working as a janitor. And it was also why I was going to finish up this floor. It wouldn't be much of an issue. It was an open secret among lifers that the Alliance padded its schedule 10 minutes. I was done with my janitorial supplies packed away in 5. In 7 minutes, I was walking toward the deployment depot, receiving salutes from fellow servicemen, most of whom I had predated but who outranked me, while still wearing my janitor's uniform. It was a strange juxtaposition, my life. I had these people's respect. There were stories of what I'd done against the bugs, of my April march on the Libria mines of fennel that every grass-fed had heard at least once before deciding to take the plunge and join up. Hell, that story was probably the reason half the younger folks in this damned infantry decided to join. They all wanted that glory. They wanted stories told about them, wanted their name remembered. They had no idea that the person wearing that name, the person who led the fight against the bugs in what could be considered our first big win in Fennel, was also the guy cleaning up their piss and emptying their trash cans. Life was a strange thing, and it took you in strange places. Captain Ryder! A voice I didn't recognize said from beside me as I neared the deployment depot. I'm not a captain, I'm a lieutenant, I corrected, something I had to do a lot of. The kids here, they had heard so much about me that they naturally assumed I'd work my way up the ranks like so many others who had managed to survive as long as I had. They would be wrong, though. They didn't know the way the system worked. Not really. They assumed that this fight was straightforward, that it was humans versus bugs in an all-out fight for our planet. And you couldn't blame them for that. There was 24-hour news coverage filled with loudmouth commentators who screamed at each other as they fought over their differing views on battle plans that never held up once the shit hit the fan anyway. Worse than that, politicians all told them that this was the case. It was us against them, and only one species could survive. While that might be true, it's far from the only thing that is. I've lived in this place long enough to see it change. And I've talked to enough lifers who came before me to know that the way things are now isn't the way they had always been. When this war first started, when the bugs decimated that city in Colorado and put our entire planet on notice, we all stood together. When they enslaved 40% of the world's men, we all mourned our losses together, and when we finally came up with the technology to beat them back off our shores, we were a single line in the sand. All of mankind standing together. At least, that's what the story said. All of that happened over 1,000 years ago. In that time, the bugs had kept hitting us hard. We might have pushed them off our shores and knocked them back into space, but they were still there. Little by little, they were getting closer to taking over our planet once and for all. And what was worse, it was the same damn bugs. Their lifespans were infinitely longer than ours. So, while the great-great-great-great-grandchildren of the first people who fought these things were in the trenches today, the very same creatures that plagued us from the starting line were still in play. We might have passed down knowledge of what to do and how to fight them, but theirs was all first-hand. They didn't have to worry about grass-feds and prissy little children who had no idea what they were getting into. Their soldiers had 1,000 years of experience. It really put my tenure into perspective. If that wasn't bad enough, mankind wasn't really united anymore. As the centuries rolled on, people did what people do best. They learned how to monetize the situation. Companies took over. Companies that built suits and weaponry. Companies that charged us to give us the best suits and weaponry. Companies that changed the way things were done. I had passed up on higher positions before, decided to stay on the ground while people I'd come up with moved into more influential spheres. By the time I thought that might be a good idea for me, things were different. What I'd done before didn't matter. Everything had been reset, turned into a point system. And though I had more experience in kills than nearly anyone in the Alliance, I was starting from zero. What was worse in my eyes was that they had made the war a goddamn game. You earned coins for kills, for completing missions, and the Alliance actually ranked you based on those earnings. Grassfeds came in with big dreams of racking up huge piles of money and the glory of being a high scorer, instead of giving the good fight. They even complained about kill stealing, as the coins and credit were awarded by whoever the mission censors recorded as getting the killing blow. Madness, I tell you. I finally focused on the person who had talked to me. "You lost?" He was a young guy with sandy blonde hair cut close to his scalp, and a smile on his face that told me if he had seen any action at all, it wasn't much. You didn't smile like that after you see a friend or two reduced to corpses in front of you. You didn't move that freely. There was not as much pep in your step. "No shame in it, son. This place can be a maze if you don't know where you're headed." It was true. At that moment, both of us were headed down a hallway that served as a spiraling ramp, meant to help us descend the floors of the Alliance Hall as quickly as possible. Still, there were dozens and dozens of these spiraling lanes jutting off at each floor, some moving upward, some going down, and some that stayed parallel to provide a straight shot to the other side of the building. It took me years to figure out the layout of this place, and I didn't look down on anyone who still hadn't. "No, sir," he replied. "I just wanted to introduce myself." Looking at him, I saw how nervous he was. He was biting his lower lip and his eyes wouldn't meet mine for long. He must have been a huge fan of the stories about me. Great. I wasn't exactly in the mood for a fan right now. I'd already spent about 9 of my 10-minute padding. I didn't have time to do the whole handshake and picture thing. "Look," I started. "I'm sure you're..." "My name is Billy Langham. I think you knew my father." My heart stuttered in my chest as I heard that name. "Bill Langham?" I narrowed my eyes. "You're Bill Langham's son?" I looked at the kid again, this time really looking at his features. I hadn't seen it before, hadn't been paying enough attention, but now that I was, I saw the way his face looked just like his father's. The way his smile was just as bright as Bill's, just as free before he died. "Bill Langham was my best friend when I joined the Alliance. A farm boy from Iowa, he and I had a lot in common. We'd grown up in awe of what the Alliance stood for, brainwashed by commercials and veterans who whitewashed what was really going on. We both wanted to make a difference. He told me about his girl back in Dubuque, about the baby she was carrying. He said he was going to go back to them, to buy his way out of his contract and use his status as a veteran to go into politics. He wanted to change the world. He was the first man I'd ever seen die with my own eyes. The bugs shoved their claws into his guts and tore him in half almost as soon as we'd stepped foot on the dirt of their homeworld. He wouldn't change the world. He would never even see it again. And he would never see his son either. It didn't seem fair I got to now." "Yes, sir, I am," he answered, nodding firmly. "How old are you?" I asked, narrowing my eyes. 17, he said quickly, smiling at me. 17, I repeated. My God. I was 34 years old. I was too young to see the kids of those I'd served with coming up in the ranks. Still, he was the same age I was when I joined the infantry. The same age his dad was when he died. "I was hoping you might have some stories about my father," he continued as I stepped onto the deposit lift. For whatever reason, he stepped onto it with me. A long plank that shot downward before lowering us into the war room, where I'd be given details about the mission I was about to be sent on. "I never got to know him, and in his letters, he told my mother how you and he were such good friends. I thought that maybe... I cut him off with a shake of my head. Why are you here? I told you. I was wondering if you could tell me about my father. No. Why are you here? In the infantry? Didn't your family have a farm to tend to? Couldn't you have gotten out of service? Gotten out of it? Confusion creeped over his face. Why would I want to do that? My father was a great man. You're a great man. Why wouldn't I want to follow in your footsteps? Damn. Looked like the commercials were still in rotation. Look, kid, I sighed. Your father was one of the best men I ever knew. And he was really excited to meet you. It's horrible that he never got to. I nodded. I have a lot of stories about him. I don't mind telling you most of them, but I can't do it right now. The lift skidded to a stop and the door to the war room opened, revealing the inner sanctum of the Alliance's military mindset. And you can't be here. I have a mission. If I make it back, we'll talk. He smiled at me again. How about we talk during it? He lifted his band up so I could see it, along with the words scrolling across it. I think we might be doing this together. I blinked. All I could see was Bill's dead body, the way those monsters just ripped him up. Looking at his son, at the same face and the same smile, my heart dropped. Damn, I muttered. 2. I moved into the war room with Billy at my side, his eyes as big as saucers as he looked around the room like a puppy on his first visit to the park. I wondered if that was how I looked the first time I set foot in this place. So innocent, so full of energy and hope. No. I might have been greener when I was grass-fed, but I had never been like that. Maybe that was the reason I had survived all this time. Whoa, Billy mumbled as he walked a pace or two behind me. I didn't need to look at him to know what his face looked like. Like most, he was probably looking up at the war room in awe, at the large metal cylinders that ran from the silver metallic floor and disappeared up into the high roof overhead. They crackled every so often with blue electricity, the remnants of information currents which were sent from every part of the Alliance halls and its orbiting vessels both above the Earth and throughout space. This was the hub of human intelligence in the universe. So it only made sense Billy would react to it like a kid watching his first snowfall. Me? Let's just say I had seen more than my fair share of snow over the years. It would take more than this to impress me.
Lieutenant Ryder, Private First Class Langham.
Della Conroy greeted us as we marched into the large circular plateau in the center of the oval-shaped room. She saluted us, and we saluted back. Though admittedly, Billy did so with a little more vigor than me. Della was the major in charge of information acquisition for the Alliance halls and headquarters, which meant two things. Nothing went down on this side of the Milky Way that she wasn't aware of, and she outranked me by more than a few levels. Neither of those things were always true, though she joined up a little bit after me. We both started at the bottom, more or less together. When she'd bounded into our platoon all those years ago, she'd been one of the most gorgeous creatures I'd ever laid eyes on. With sunburned yellow hair, a tight body with lithe limbs, and eyes that were always on the lookout for trouble. I spent a lot of time fantasizing about her. My fantasies would soon become reality. As it turned out, she had looked at me in the same way. What we had together could never last, though. We both knew that. Even if both of us managed to survive the bugs, infantry Marines weren't allowed to fraternize. Of course, that rule seemed insane to me when they put us all in the same bunks. Men and women, trained to be in the best physical shape of their lives, knowing that they might not get a tomorrow, sleeping side by side. I used to wonder what they thought was going to happen. I still didn't know. If they wanted to test our resolve, it was a fool's errand. We might not be bugs, but we were still animals. Resisting the temptations of the flesh was always a taller order than running out to near certain death. I like to think that they knew grass-feds would get involved with each other. Maybe they thought it would strengthen our bonds. Either way, it didn't matter. When she moved up the rankings, it became clear that there was no future for us. A major could not be with an infantryman out in the open. It didn't stop her from crawling into my bed from time to time, though. At least until she got married a few years ago, though. Now there was nothing left of our relationship but these salutes, the memories, and if I'm not mistaken, a couple of longing looks from across rooms every once and again. "I hope the day finds you both well," she said, her tone as formal and detached as always. "As well as can be expected," we both answered, as was customary. Though, again, Billy's words seemed to lift with a bit more excitement. "Good," she said. "The last member of your crew will be here shortly, but he's being brought here by messenger straight from the North American base and will be patched through on comm. He should be able to hear us right now." The North American base? Jesus, they were pulling kids straight from Earth now? Not so much as a training session up here? I would have shaken my head in disapproval if it wouldn't have been disrespectful of both Della and her rank. Besides, I didn't need to. The look that passed between us told me she knew exactly how I felt about that. I thought about that base. About where that kid was jetting from at this very moment. The North American base was in Cocoa Beach, Florida, where the NASA headquarters was when that still existed. Of course, once humanity realized what was staring back at them from space, the focus turned away from exploration and more toward survival. Losing 40% of the men on the planet will do that to you. I hadn't been back there in years, and hadn't heard from anyone back there in nearly a year. I thought about my brother, moving around in his wheelchair and taking care of our mother. I hope they were both okay. Part of me wished I could have been back there with them, to help them get by. I knew that could never happen, though. First off, I hadn't saved near enough money to buy out my contract, and secondly, I wasn't sure doing so would even be a good idea. For all the problems I had had with the Alliance and the way it was run these days, I couldn't deny the fact that I was a lifer. And like most lifers, I had a complicated relationship with Earth. It was the shining Mecca and all that, the thing we fought for. Still, I couldn't, with a straight face, say that I felt like I belonged there. In truth, I couldn't remember a lot about the way it felt to feel sunlight that wasn't filtered through UV glass, or gravity that wasn't machine-made and managed. That was okay by me. There was a reason I had passed up on every sabbatical I had been offered. God knows it wasn't for the overtime. I had found a place here in the infantry. Somewhere I belonged, for better or worse. Bouncing back and forth would only serve to muddy that. It would cloud my vision and make my heart shaky. That kind of thing would get you killed. "So," she said, pursing her lips and moving on, "the three of you have some work to do." "I figured you didn't bring me here for old time's sake," I muttered, only half-joking. Della glared at me and ignored my comment. She tapped a few times on the counter in front of her and, in the space between us, a holographic image of a small rock planet appeared. "Turin," I murmured. "Yes, Lieutenant Ryder. This is Turin," Della confirmed, looking over at me. "Now, if you don't mind, I'll fill PFC Langham in on what he's looking at, as he hasn't had near the experience staring at the same system of planets as you have." Her eyebrows arched at me. "What has it been? 15 years now?" 17, I muttered. I wouldn't have answered at all, given the fact that she was being a real bitch. But ignoring a superior officer was a finable offense, and I didn't have the coin to spare. "Must be downright second nature to you by now," she turned to Billy. "As you heard, this is Turin, one of the orbiting moons of Fennel, home planet and stronghold of the Akburian Empire." It always struck me as strange why the Alliance insisted on calling these things by the names they gave themselves. The way I saw it, doing that gave them power. It made them relatable. These things were bugs. We might as well just call them that. I mean, when's the last time you felt bad about crushing a bug under your foot? If you have, you shouldn't. Turns out they don't feel so bad when the situation is reversed. Turin has long served as a military outpost and mineral reserve for the Akbarians, she continued. Until recently, we thought of it as impregnable. Now, though, you managed to knock it up. I grinned a little, despite myself. With a different officer, I might not have been so fresh. Of course, I'd never had any of those officers' nipples in my mouth. I guess there was a difference there. Besides, Della knew it was all in good fun. She knew it was my process. Laugh at death so it can't take you with it. That had always been the way I did things, and it had served me well, so far. Once again, Della ignored me. Surveillance methods were able to make it into the Turin atmosphere and pass undetected into the moon's colonies. They've since stopped transmitting, but before that, they sent intel about the layout of the moon as well as what it contained. Librium? I asked, though I didn't need to wait for the answer. I knew what they had found on that damned moon. It was the only thing the Alliance cared about anymore. Librium was used to make our battle suits. It was used to fight the bugs, and that was all that mattered anymore. The fight. Among other things, Della answered as Billy remained quiet. But yes, the Librium is what is of importance to this particular mission. The doors at the far end opened, and the lift ejected another willing soldier out to us. Somehow, this one looked even younger than Billy. With red hair and so many freckles that it was hard to see the skin underneath, this kid looked like a walking puppet. I'd bet what little coin I had in my coffers he was just as effective in the field. It was all I could do not to sigh in disgust as Della addressed him. PFC Conroy, glad to see you made the jump okay. I trust you're up to speed? She caught my eye as she spoke, and absolutely read the frustration on my face. Two grass feds meant I was going to have to do all the heavy lifting. It meant they'd have just come out of training, and that all their instincts would be wrong. They'd be interested in doing what they were taught as opposed to what worked to keep them alive. Worse than that, it would mean their armor would be shit. Armor was expensive, and the Librium needed to make it was hard to get. Sure, we had some on Earth. It was what the bugs came for in the first place. But in the case of our planet, the Librium was near the core. Accessing it would mean destroying our planet as we know it. To that end, we were left with what we could scavenge from bug wreckage and corpses, as well as what we found on other uninhabited planets. That meant good armor. Armor with a lot of Librium was saved for people the Alliance thought were safe bets to actually bring it back. At least back in the old days, anyway. These days, it meant whoever could rack up the coins, either through kill streaks or whatever other bullshit goals the Alliance came up with that day, would get the best armor. So while my armor was pretty top-notch, an artifact of the old system, the grass beds they were sending down with me might as well have been outfitted in tin cans. Yes, ma'am, Conroy answered nervously. It's Major, Della corrected him, her tone stern. Jesus and the saints, I muttered, shaking my head. Yes, ma'am, he answered quickly. I mean, yes, Major. I'm sorry, Major. Noted, Della answered. She turned back to me. Of course she did. It was time to talk about the specifics of the mission, and there was very little need wasting that energy on the other two. They would follow my lead. That was how it worked. You'll be sent down with three other triads, she said, using the Alliance phrasing for groups of three. Each group will be set down at adjacent points outside of what our information tells us is the biggest Librium mine on the planet. As always, necessary maps and information have been beamed to your suits and will be available when necessary. She nodded, as much to herself as to me. You are to reach that mine and get us exact coordinates so we can then strip it of as much Librium as possible. It will then be destroyed on the way out. Once they know we are able to reach them, the bugs will alter their security protocol,
Our intelligence says destroying this mine will be a near-death blow to the bugs.
I'll believe that when I see it, I said. It had been 1,000 years since the start of this fight, and in my 17-year sojourn, I'd heard the word death blow thrown around so much it had lost all meaning. Della's face tightened. Obviously, that was one quip too far.
If you'd like to see it, then do it, Lieutenant Ryder.
Her lips disappeared into a thin, aggravated line.
Otherwise, stop complaining. That's an order. Understood?
Understood. It was a scolding, to be sure, but I couldn't help smirking a little as I thought about the girl she used to be, about what I used to do with that girl when we were sure no one was looking. She always did like to be in charge.
Good. Now get to your transport vehicle. You leave in 160 seconds. Any further questions can be handled by your pilot. He's also been briefed on the mission. Though at this point, if you don't know what you're doing, I'm not sure any amount of answers could help you.
She gave another salute.
Be swift. Be safe.
Be effective. We all answered in a military bark. Della looked at me again. Though this time it might have been one of those longing looks. After all, this was, like all missions, a dangerous one. I might have been good at what I did, but even the good died. Still, there was nothing to say about that now. Too much time had passed. Too many things had changed, and we weren't the children we used to be. Instead of putting all that into words, she said simply,
"Dismissed."
3. I walked into the transport vehicle with the pair of grass-feds behind me. I could hear them muttering to each other. Too stupid to realize they shouldn't be happy right now. We were about to descend into a war zone, into a place that would make Dante's description of hell look like a trip to the malt shop with plans to skip along the park afterward. The worst part was, I didn't know anything about it. The moon of Turin had long been a secret held by the bugs. Their security systems made it impossible for us to know what was beyond the thick cloud of smoke and the smog that served as its atmosphere. Now that the heads of Alliance had managed to pop a camera or two in there, though, they seemed to think jumping headfirst into the place was just hunky-dory. That was ridiculous. It was like glancing at a postcard of Paris and then facing off with your worst enemy there, thinking you were an expert on the terrain. You know, back when Paris still existed. Just because I had my doubts about this mission didn't mean I would voice them, though. First of all, it wasn't my place. Those decisions were made by people with more stars on their shoulders than me and higher rankings than I would ever have. Secondly, no one would listen to me. I might have been a legend to the grass-fed circulating through this place, but to those in command, I was an underling. A janitor who had managed not to get himself killed for more missions than any living Marine on the planet or the Alliance halls. All that would buy me is a scolding. And if it came from anyone other than Della, it would probably get me fined as well.
"Oh, wow. It looks just like it does in the pictures," Billy said,
doing everything but wetting himself with glee as he looked around the vehicle. It might not have been fair to judge him. After all, the transport vehicle was really something, especially if you had never seen one up close before. A rounded silver circle that drove into a point at the end. The thing looked like a giant flying bullet when it took off, moving at warp speeds to take us where we needed to be in the universe. That shape was definitely on purpose, a symbol meant to show fierceness and danger. Of course, it wasn't directed at the bugs. As far as anyone knew, no species outside of man used metal bullets as a weapon of choice. Why would they? It took 12 rounds to break through the bug's exoskeleton. A flamethrower would do much better. Hell, so would a good old-fashioned axe. The bullet shape of our transport was likely intended to make us feel better about ourselves, about our chances in a universe that was not only bigger than us, but also seemed to outpace us at every given turn. We were the most technologically stalled species in the universe who hadn't already died out. either by the inability to protect itself from a natural disaster or succumbing to its own baser instincts. In fact, there's a popular theory that if not for the bug's intervention, man would have destroyed each other with nuclear weapons. I didn't subscribe to that thought process, not because it didn't seem reasonable to me. After all, the only thing worse than human beings was everything else. I just didn't like the idea of giving the bugs credit for anything, even if it wasn't on purpose. "You over there," I said, pointing for Billy to sit in the open pod to my left. "And you there." I motioned for Conroy to do the same to my right. "Yes, sir," Billy said and hopped to it. "Mark," I corrected, sitting in the center pod and pulling the crash restraints, pad set on a bar, down far enough that they clicked as they pressed against my chest and shoulders. "Excuse me?" Billy said, looking over at me and mimicking my actions. "We're about to get really comfortable with each other, son." I glanced over to make sure Conroy was doing the same thing. "More comfortable than you could imagine. You're about to put your life in my hands in a way you've never done with anybody else in your entire life. Not your mother, not your pastor, not your best friend. I'm about to be the most important person in your whole damn life. And, rank aside, I won't have you calling me sir. If we make it off this rock, you can call me sir then. Until then, you call me Mark, and I'll call you Billy." I looked over at Conroy. "And you?" "Opie," Conroy said, smiling. I narrowed my eyes. "Seriously?" "Yeah, my father was a big fan of the—" "I don't give a damn. I'm calling you Conroy, Conroy." "Okay," he said and turned back straight in his seat. I turned back to Billy. "Tell me about your training." As I stared at him, I was once again struck by just how much he looked like his father. For just a second, I was transported back to my first mission, with Bill Langham sitting right beside me in a transport vehicle a lot like this one. I might have been as impressed by the damn thing back then as Billy and Conroy were now. I was definitely just as nervous. Billy's hand shook as he pulled at the pads and bar, making sure he pulled it down far enough. "It's fine," I said. "So long as it's firm against your chest, you're not going anywhere."
"Okay."
He was trying really hard to suppress the growing nerves in his voice. It was always the same thing. Grass feds were brave, even giddy, before everything started. They were hyped up on stories of victory and honor, on things they had seen in the movies about the battles on Fennel, and the sweeping human victories that, honestly, either never took place or looked so different from the silver screen representations that none of the soldiers I knew had survived any of it would even watch the damn things. Maybe, nowadays, they also dreamed of the fat stacks of coin they could make taking on the bugs, or getting their name on the bug kill or missions complete leaderboards. Soon, though, usually about this time, the truth of what these brand new Marines had signed up for would start sinking in. The adrenaline of being where they always fantasized about being and wearing the uniform of a serviceman would fade away, leaving a steaming pile of doubt, insecurities, and, well, shit, to take its place. It was my job to take them out of that, though. Not because I needed to make them feel better about themselves. No, I didn't care what these grass-fed saw when they looked in the mirror. But they were with me today. Like it or not, they would be flanking, covering, and assisting me in what was sure to be an extremely dangerous mission. If there was anything more detrimental to success than jitters, this Marine hadn't seen it yet. "Your training," I repeated. "Tell me about your training."
"Right," Billy said. "It was pretty standard, I guess. Zero-G simulation, VR bugs to deal with, and a time mission on a collapsing space station." He nodded. "I aced every single one of them."
There we go. A little bit of confidence started to bloom on his face. I could use that. Confidence often served as the buffer to reality, especially in the far-flung reaches of space.
"That's nothing like the real thing," Conroy said from beside me.
shaking his stupid red head with a smug look on his face like he was there when Washington crossed the Delaware. I turned to the young man. And how the hell would you know that, Red Bean? His face blanched as he took me in, as though he couldn't believe he had just spoken about experience in front of the one person you don't speak about experience in front of. Even if he wasn't fresh out of diapers, he couldn't stack up with me on successful missions and won battles. No one in the entire alliance could, and everyone knew it.
I mean, it's different is all, Conroy stammered. I went on my first mission a few weeks ago. We had to deactivate some pulse grenades set up on an orbiting bug cruiser a few light years away from the space station. Even met up with a couple of bad boys myself. Banked a lot of coin, and I saved 90% of it. He nodded. Gonna buy out my contract.
There was a lot wrong with what that bastard had just said. Bug cruisers were notoriously lightweight jobs. Everyone worth his salt knew they became obsolete over 100 years ago and that any bugs still on them were strictly of the non-combatant variety. My grandma Maisie could have taken one of them out if she was still with us, Lord rest her soul. I decided not to chastise him about that, though, because the rest of what he said was so stupid that it verged on dangerous. More importantly, don't save your damned coin, you idiot, I said, my tone a near growl. The suits are made to absorb bug energy because they are based on bug biotech. The same thing that makes the bugs deadly is what powers our armor, and the Alliance would love to see you come back filled to the brim with that energy. That's why they pay us based on kills and energy returned, but just because they want it doesn't mean it's in your best interest to sell it to them. It actually means the opposite. I shook my head. They charge you for upgrades out there. They don't do that because they want you dead. They do it because upgrades take energy. And energy used is energy you can't give them. Energy they can't stockpile or use for whatever the hell they consider a better use of money and time than us. I was so enthralled with giving these men a real education that I barely noticed when the transport started moving, jarring itself into hyperspeed. If that sounds like a scam, that's because it is, I continued. The Alliance is our last best defense against the bugs, but that doesn't mean it's not a company like any other. It wants to make a profit, and it wants to get by on as little outgo as humanly possible. There's no bigger business in the world than that of war, and a war where the entire human race is united on one side. Hell, there's probably never been a bigger gold rush in the history of this whole damn planet. I pointed at Billy. What you've got on your back? The suit that's going to activate the instant we touch down on this moon? It costs the Alliance money, energy, and delirium. You bring back enough energy to make up for that money, and they consider it a win. If you keep doing that, they'll pay you. It won't be a fraction of what they'll make themselves, but it'll be more than you've ever had. And yeah, it'll be enough to buy you out of your contract. I looked back at Conroy as I punctuated my point. If you survive, that is. Let me tell you a dirty little secret, something the Alliance doesn't put on their brochures. The minute you absorb that bug energy, it's theirs. You can use it for upgrades. You can use every ounce of it if you want. But if you get ripped apart out there, if your suit gets destroyed, all that energy gets beamed back to the halls. They get theirs, and your family gets pieces of you shipped to them in a box. So don't be stupid. Don't think that just because you can store energy to sell for some extra coin that you should. Your shielding, your life support, your weapons all need that same energy. So use what you have to in order to make sure that you live. At the end of the day, you're the only one looking out for yourself. I turned back to Billy. Except for me, of course. Billy blinked at me. Is that how he died? Is that why my father didn't make it? It was, of course. Back then I didn't know what I know now. Even if I did, I'm not sure I could have convinced Billy's old man of any of it. He wanted to buy his contract out quickly. He wanted to be there when his son was born so his suit didn't have the shielding it needed. His weapons weren't as potent as they needed to be. I couldn't tell that to Billy, of course. You can't tell someone that they're the reason one of their parents died, even if it was indirectly. That would destroy the kid, and I couldn't have that right now. I needed him sharp. Your father was a good man and a smart man, I said. He did everything right. Here's where the lie comes in. He died saving a fellow officer. He died a hero, Billy, and he died so people like you could live in a world that didn't have to worry about bugs. The pilot's voice came through the speaker on our pods. Touchdown on the surface of Turin in 12 seconds and counting. Suits will activate immediately. Be swift, be safe. Be effective, we all finished. I looked back at Billy and once again saw his father sitting in the seat. Let's get this done. I nodded at the boy firmly. You ready? I'm ready, he answered, but of course, I didn't believe him. 4. 12 seconds, I said, repeating what the pilot had said through the loudspeaker at us. Looking over at Billy and then Conroy, I knew what I was going to find. This was when the shit hit the fan, and the dreams these kids had been nurturing since they could hold a bottle with one hand smashed into reality. I still remembered when it happened to me. It had been seconds before my first mission, the realization that I might be an instant away from dying. I could still feel the shakes and sweats that came with it, the way my stomach refused to settle no matter how many times I told myself I was ready for this. It had been almost as terrifying as when I'd actually jumped out of the bullet. Like these two grass beds, I'd had an older man with me. His name was Rod, and I thought he was the wisest, most grizzled man on the face of any earth. Looking back, I could see now that he wasn't even as old as I am now. He'd died 2 missions after my first one. Torn to pieces when a bug grabbed him from behind and threw him half a football field into the horde. That was when I realized it took more than wisdom to see it through this. Billy looked panicked but was trying hard to keep it inside. Beads of moisture had sprouted on his forehead, and he was looking straight ahead. Conroy looked a touch less affected, which made a certain amount of sense. After all, Mr. 90% had already been through his first mission. At the very least, his pre-first mission jitters were already out of the way. That was good. I couldn't hold 2 hands and a gun out there. I needed at least one of these grass-feds to be able to hold his own. If you've got prayers, say them now, I barked, looking over at Conroy before turning my gaze to Billy. We're Methodist, he answered, even though what I'd said wasn't a question. The truth was, I knew the kid's religion, or at least I'd known what his father's had been. The older Bill Langham had spent nearly every waking minute trying to talk me into joining his faith when we met all those years ago. He told me having a relationship with God would give me strength, that it would keep me safe. I wasn't sure about any of that. Still, if his faith comforted the kid, it was good for something. I nodded firmly at him. Then be quick about it, and tap your emblem, both of you. I looked over to Conroy as the pilot counted down from 3 seconds. It's time to suit up. Looking forward to the point of the bullet, the part that was seconds away from opening up and depositing us onto an alien land, I tapped on my emblem and allowed my suit to pull out from it. As it covered me, latching onto both the bracelet attached to the veins on my wrist and the hole drilled into the base of my neck so it could access my brainstem, I breathed a sigh of relief. Back before I joined up to fight a bunch of alien bugs, I used to love watching my mother cook at home. It didn't matter whether we had company or whether my brother and I were even hungry. She cooked twice a day and 3 times on Sunday. The food was good. Don't get me wrong. My mother was a talented woman when it came to a stove and spatula. But even Picasso was known to put the brush down every once in a while. My mother never had. I asked her once why she did it. What made her spend so much of her time in the same kitchen, looking out at the world from the same window? Because, she told me, when you find your place in the world, something that really fits, you don't leave it. That would just be foolish. Those words stuck with me as a kid, even though I didn't necessarily understand what they'd meant. That changed the first time I'd tried on my suit. When those cuffs clasped around my arms and that helmet appeared on my face, changing the way I saw the world and interacted with the people around me, I knew what my mother had been talking about that day. Things had changed since that first time, of course. I had grown a bit more grizzled, and my opinions about what we were doing, the way I saw the world, had changed too. I used to think there were shades of gray to things. Then, when my father told me that there was only black and white, only right and wrong, he was being too close-minded. I didn't know how correct the old man was back then, nor how much like him I'd turn out to be. The suit had changed too, at least cosmetically. My luck and success in the field had earned me a fair number of upgrades before the change, and since then I'd used my coin wisely. While I was no closer to buying out my contract than Conroy was with one mission to his name, I was tricked out beyond measure. I had bells, whistles, and weapons for days. My suit was a thing of beauty, and I took pride in her. "Been a while, Annabelle," I said, addressing my suit by the name I'd given her. "I was afraid you wouldn't be as pretty as the last time you went out. Glad to see nothing's changed."
"Why, Lieutenant Ryder, you flatter me,"
the suit responded, its soft dialect pulsing straight into my brainstem and filling my head with a comforting and familiar tone. "You should be flattered." I found myself smiling as I began to interact with my suit for the first time in a while. "You're a thing of beauty. Hell, if you were a human being, I might actually marry you."
"Don't be ridiculous. If I were a human, Lieutenant Ryder, I'd be much too good for you."
"Can't argue with that," I muttered as the bars and pads holding me down gave way, lifting in preparation for the descent we were about to embark on. "Run diagnostic check, Annabelle." I stood slowly enough to keep my balance and adjust to the extra weight I was now carrying with the suit solidified around my body. It might have fit like a glove and even felt as familiar as an old glove at times, but there was still the smallest period of adjustment necessary.
"Brain functions strong," Annabelle started. "Lung capacity at max. Heartbeat is regular. Other than needing extra vitamin D, which I'm applying at this very moment, you're in perfect health, Lieutenant Ryder."
She waited for a beat, and I felt a rush in the back of my neck as the aforementioned vitamin was shot into my bloodstream. I wasn't sure what good extra vitamin D would do, but the cooling rush felt nice and did much to take my mind off what was coming.
"Shared diagnostics suggest your teammates are both suffering from erratic heart activity," Annabelle said.
"They're grass-feds," I replied, looking around to find them standing up beside me. "Just nervous is all." As their commanding officer in this mission, I was able to access their health and energy stats. In fact, the virtual heads-up display constantly floating in my eyes gave me constant pop-up information above their heads. Some Marines turned these extra info feeds off because they were distracting, but I knew better. All information was power. Floating over Billy's head was PFC Langham, as well as shielding 100%, vitals okay, and energy 20%. That last sounded bad, but considering the Alliance wanted you to harvest excess energy, they always put way more capacity than a suit would normally need for the start of a mission. Likewise, Conroy was denoted by PFC Conroy. His nameplate showed the same information, but he also had a bright, flashing notation that he was on a one-mission victory streak and a two-kill streak. Well, at least he had actually killed a bug or two. But I always laughed when the Alliance considered even one successful mission a streak.
Furthermore, as CEO, I could even be able to adjust certain things inside of their suits if I thought it would help our shared chances of survival, providing that those things were freebies. The ability to choose to use or not use stored and gained energy and coin to upgrade weapons and defense mechanisms was a right. It was written right into the orbital constitution, so there was no getting around it. Thankfully, things like vitamin shots and temperature adjustments weren't considered pay-to-play type things. As such, I had free rein over them. The same couldn't be said for Billy and Conroy. I was their superior, so they couldn't so much as hear what I was saying to my suit. It was, to this point, one of the few perks of age I had found.
"Shall I issue them sedatives, Lieutenant Ryder?"
Annabelle said, no emotion at all in her computerized voice.
"Negative," I said. "Let them feel the jitters. It'll do a lot to keep them alive."
"Understood. You'll be approaching the designated ejection point in 1.7 seconds. Alliance regulations insist you take your place on the ejection pad."
"I know what regulations say," I muttered, walking over to the point and motioning for the others to do the same. "Open communication lines between the three of us." Usually, communication lines had to be mutually agreed upon to be opened. Say, if I ran across another Alliance member who was equal to my rank or had nothing to do with my current mission or team, I would have to send that guy a request to talk, and depending on whether or not he said yes, we could shoot the shit. Again, because I outranked these grass-feds and because I was their acting superior on this mission, I didn't need to ask. I just boomed right into their minds like the damned voice of God.
"Get ready," I said.
But before I could finish my sentence, the bullet opened, and the ejection pads flung us out into the atmosphere. As my armored body sailed through the sky, I was inundated with the intel Della and the other Alliance heads had picked up about this place. It wasn't more than a handful of still pictures showing rounded sand huts, the bugs' housing of choice, dry and desolate fields full of holes in the ground, where the bugs scavenge for food, and the cave that was our primary mission. In addition to the pictures, a holographic map was downloaded into my brain. I saw the cave along with the distance between where we were scheduled to land and it. I also saw the positions in which the other three teams would land. The air was thick and a little foggy as I moved through it, but I didn't need to see the world itself just yet. Not when the map was so detailed.
"Stay close to me," I said to Billy and Conroy.
"How do we..."
"Hands at your sides and feet together," I answered, cutting Billy off.
"Throw your body weight to your left. Conroy, throw yours to the right."
Switching back to Annabelle, I said, "Initiate personal gravity field. I want these bastards close enough to me that nothing will happen to them in the descent."
"Initiating personal gra..."
A pulse knocked me off course, shutting Annabelle up and causing my entire suit to shake as I drove toward the moon's surface. I cursed under my breath, my heart racing. I scrambled, mentally searching for something, perhaps a memory, to hold onto and calm me down. I had learned a long time ago that freaking out and losing your cool didn't necessarily do anything but ensure you wouldn't live to see tomorrow. I had seen more people than I'd ever have cared to think about lose their shit at the first obstacle and pay for it with their lives. If you made something bigger than yourself, then there was no way to overcome it. At least, that was what I had always believed.
"Electromagnetic beam detected," Annabelle said. "Damage is at 7%, but thrusters will take 2.7 seconds to reload."
"I don't have that," I said, swallowing hard and trying to come up with an alternative.
"I am aware of that, Lieutenant Ryder. Defensive shields have been deployed in preparation for a crash landing."
I looked up, watching Conroy and Billy veering toward each other, somehow unaware that I had been knocked out of the sky.
"Pull back," I screamed at them. "Pull the hell back."
It was too late, though. The pair crashed into each other and sparked as their suits inflicted unnecessary damage on the other. I slammed into the ground, hard and dry rock, a second later. The surface of the moon was intense, hardened and seemingly completely without moisture. It would have reminded me of one of the deserts on Earth's surface, except it was darker and tinted with a red hue. Hitting hard on my neck,
I flipped over three times before I came to a stop on my back, just in time to see a huge damn bug looming over me, gashing its pinchers as it got ready to rip me to pieces.